This is a lesson on disability. Let's pray. Dear Lord, please grant that we gain wisdom from your word about disability and learn to see it as you do. Amen. I'll be interviewing various sources, most of which I won't even mention, but two of the books will be Same Lake, Different Boat by Stephanie Hubeck, and the other one is Barrier-Free Friendships by Johnny Erksentada and Steve Jensen. Those of us who are disabled form what has been called the largest minority group, an estimated 20% of the population. Yet people were generally taken by surprise by the disabled, their needs, their capabilities, and even their very existence. Stephanie Hubeck, in her book, mentioned three basic views on disability. The first is historical. Disability is an abnormal part of a normal world. The disabled are other, often despised or pitied, and usually considered less than the rest of the human race. As a reaction to that, we got postmodernism. Disability is a normal part of a normal world. This is denial. It really doesn't deal with the prejudice. It's a nice sentiment, perhaps, but not really practical. Then there's the biblical, which is not always held by the church. Disability is a normal part of an abnormal world. The world was changed from very good, from perfection, to a world with death and pain and imperfection when Adam sinned at the beginning. That brought disability into the world. Now, let's be careful. One mistake many Christians make is to assume that your disability is a punishment for sin. John 9, verses 1 through 3. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. So while sin brought disability into the world, disability doesn't mean you're being punished for something or that you are a greater sinner. Now, sometimes it can be punishment for sin. A king's arm was dried up, stiffened, in 1 Kings 13, verse 4. The Bible also records several instances of God inflicting leprosy on a sinner. Now, as a footnote, I should say that the leprosy described in the Bible is generally not considered the same thing we call leprosy today. The symptoms don't match. Apparently, we're just using the same word, but the meaning seems to be different. And as another example of it not being sin, we can turn to the Old Testament, to the book of Job, chapter 2, verses 2 through 10. And the Lord said unto Satan, From whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord, and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God, and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him, to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord, and said, Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath he will give for his life. But put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him a part shard to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God, and die. But he said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. Now, while this was temporary, it was a painful experience, and Job wasn't being punished for sin. It makes this couch very clear of that. It also shows that God is in control of disability, even if we don't always know what's going on. Some people seem to take almost a perverse comfort, for some reason, and the idea that God didn't do this to me is like, well, he definitely let it happen, he definitely could have prevented it. I don't see why they're comforted by God not being in control. That seems to be a very uncomfortable solution. And in fact, we have in Exodus 4, verses 10 through 14, "And Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech, and of a slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb or deaf, or the seeing or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And he said, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, Is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart." So, again, we're seeing that God is in control of disabilities, but that it's not always punishment for sin. And yet, I remember watching a TED Talk where the Old Testament is accused of calling all disability a punishment for sin. And yet we've just seen in the books of Job and Exodus, which are in the Old Testament, that it's not the case. Probably the big reason for this thinking is Leviticus 21, verses 17 through 23. "Speak unto Aaron, saying, Whosoever he be of thy seed in their generations that hath any blemish, let him not approach to offer the bread of his God. For whatsoever man he be that hath a blemish, he shall not approach, a blind man, or a lame, or he that hath a flat nose, or anything superfluous, or a man that is broken-footed, or broken-handed, or crooked-backed, or a dwarf, or that hath a blemish in his eye, or be scurvy, or scabbed, or hath his stones broken. No man that hath a blemish of the seed of Aaron, the priest, shall come nigh to offer the offerings of the Lord made by fire. He hath a blemish, he shall not come nigh to offer the bread of his God. He shall eat the bread of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy, only he shall not go in unto the veil, nor come nigh unto the altar, because he hath a blemish, that he profane not my sanctuaries. For I, the Lord, do sanctify them." Ouch. Now this seems like ableism. Ableism is kind of like racism, except that it's based on ability or perceived ability instead of race. So what do we do with this? Well, first, I want you to notice, in particular, verse 22. "He shall eat the bread of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy." So they're not being cut off from the benefits of priesthood, nor are their children necessarily excluded from becoming priests. But that doesn't fully satisfy us, does it? Let's look at it. Leviticus 12, verse 2. "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, If a woman have conceived seed, and born a man-child, then she shall be unclean 7 days, according to the days of the separation of for her infirmity shall she be unclean." Now bear with me here. Why does giving birth make a woman unclean? It isn't sin, because God commanded people to be fruitful and multiply multiple times throughout the Bible. So that has to mean there's a difference between sin and being ceremonial unclean. They could be the same thing under certain circumstances, but it is possible to be unclean without sinning. And since they're allowed to eat of the holy bread, they're clearly not being accused of being sinners. So what's going on here? Well, taking just the blindness, for example, there were certain things in the temple that they were not supposed to touch, most notably the Ark of the Covenant, which was within the veil. So, obviously, there'd be a bit of a safeguard going on there. But part of the point of this whole system was to point to the profound gap between what we are, a bunch of sinners, rebellious traitors, really, and what we're supposed to be, sinless saints. Even today, when the ceremonial laws of the Old Testament are superseded by Christ's sacrifice, those laws point to the gap that Christ had come to fill, to show how impossible it was to approach God without Christ as mediator. God selected out of one nation, Israel, a specific tribe, Levi, to serve God, and of that tribe, only those descending from Aaron could serve as priests, and not, as we've seen, all of them. And only a high priest could go into the innermost chamber on one specific day of the year, after putting on the proper detailed attire, doing all the correct sacrifices, etc., go in, do the job, and then get out. Oh, and then of this ended the need for daily sacrifices, that are only pointing to Christ's sacrifice. So because of the necessary symbolism, some people couldn't serve as priests, even though they could otherwise take part in the religion. I also wonder if there might be preventing of exploitation here. Historically, the disabled have been used as freak shows, and God may have also been setting up a defense against any alterations being made to the body other than the male circumcision that was already commanded. So basically, I don't think this was ableism. Note that another part of Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 14, we read, "Thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shalt fear thy God. I am the Lord." Going back to that TED Talk, after accusing the Old Testament of equating disability with sin, she also accused the New Testament of a fix-it mentality. The disability community is used to being treated as a project, or a diagnosis, rather than as a person, a human being. Whether it is the doctor, or the church, this attitude can be found. For Christians, there's this assumption that if you have faith, you get healed. Partly this is because of all the healings in the Bible, especially in the New Testament. But remember, Jesus and his disciples were claiming that things had changed. The ceremonial law was being superseded by Jesus' sacrifice. Miracles were part of their credentials, backing up their claims. And if you look, not everyone gets healed. Moses wasn't cured of his speech. God never offered that. He was just told to get to work. Then there's 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 10. "And lest I should be exalted above measure, through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distress for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." Now Paul, who wrote a significant portion of the New Testament, a patriarch of the faith, was basically, after praying, he prayed three times to get this thorn in the flesh, and we're not told exactly what that was, removed. And God said, "No, my grace is sufficient for you." He wasn't told to have more faith and get healed, but to put his faith in God and rely on God to carry him through this. Not everyone gets healed before heaven. Yet people read of the miraculous healings and take that out of context of the whole scripture. I mean, the healings are exciting, and people don't want to see problems, and it's a lot easier to tell someone to have faith and be healed than to walk beside them through their disability while maintaining your faith. And walking beside them is what we're supposed to do. Romans 12:3-10. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teacheth on teaching, or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that ruleth with diligence, he that sheweth mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation, but abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Now these days, conservative Christians may be wary of the term diversity. That's because today, a diversity of moral standards are considered a good thing. Except, of course, standards set by the Bible. That has to be glossed over or rewritten, but what the Bible actually says is not to be tolerated. Yet while the Bible teaches us a unified and set standards, within that there is a great deal of variety. We're not to distinguish between rich and poor. Fishermen, shepherds, and even tax collectors are welcome. Prostitutes have to give up their profession, but they're still welcome to come in. So classism is out. Racism is out. God made all nations from one blood. We're all descended from Adam and Eve via Noah. And while people make a lot about the Israelites kicking out the natives of Canaan, Abraham's family wouldn't inherit the land for 400 or so years because the inhabitants weren't sinful enough at the time to lose the land. And ableism is out. We've just covered a lot of reasons why. And if we're all different parts of the same body, then we've all got different roles to play within a unified morality. People with disabilities, this is different roles for people who don't have disabilities. And it's not just going to be two categories there. There's some of the people with disabilities are going to have some of the same roles as those of us, as those without disability. We're all supposed to be together. And we all need friends. Remember, we're all made in God's image, and we all need God's grace. And Jesus formed friendships. He spent time with the despised, even the tax collectors. Yes, I do see the irony of me talking about relationships. You know, I'm the introvert, I'm off in my own world, but yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. Now, friendships can be at different levels, acquaintanceship, casual, or they can be much closer. That's true of any friendship. Some of us may be called to have closer friendships with people with disabilities, or maybe just one person with a disability, and others of us be much more casual. But if we're going to minister to the disabled and let them come alongside us as participants, not merely audience, if we're going to form mutual friendships with them, what do we need to know about disability? The first rule in dealing with someone who has a disability is this. Assume that you're an idiot. Because you probably are. Proverbs 26, verse 12. Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? There is more hope of a fool than of him. In other words, be teachable. There are more disabilities being discovered every year. You can't know them all. And you can't know what skills a person in front of you may possess, or may be practicing. Johnny Erickson Tada once had someone come up behind her and push her wheelchair, without asking. The man was assuming that she needed his help, and that he knew where she was going. Very quickly, she did need his help, to pick up all the packages that spilled from her lap, because of his assistance. Ask before you help. If the answer is no, respect that. If the answer is yes, follow their instructions. If you recall the book When Helping Hurts, which was a book we studied about helping the poor, there were certain situations where helping the poor actually hurt them, and there are certain other better ways to help. The same thing applies with disability. You need to actually learn what's going on, and you need to listen to the disabled, to their families, because so often, throughout history, other people have imposed solutions that didn't work. I remember watching a documentary about a guy. He was born without arms. He was using his legs and feet as kind of arms, and then they had put in these fake arms strapped to him, which he complained about, and they was like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, and all that type of stuff. Well, they weren't helping him. And he does not use them now that he's an adult. Obviously, with children, it can be a little trickier, because they don't always know what's good for them. But even with children, you do not want to be dismissive. Ignorance is okay. It's not great, but it's okay. It's arrogance that is not okay. It's when you think you know that you tend to cause problems. But what if you know someone with the same disability? Assume you're an idiot. If you met, say, someone who's blind, you've met one person who's blind. Some people who are blind can't see a thing. Most have partial vision, maybe peripheral, maybe in the center of their eyes, maybe just enough to see the lights on. And their skill sets can be different. One may use a cane. Another may use a seeing-eye dog. Once, an advocate who was trying to get a person who is blind a job, was talking on the phone with this guy who was hiring, and the guy was like, oh yeah, it's amazing what you blind people can do, la-da-da. And I know this one girl, and I don't remember the girl's name, we'll call her Jane Doe, who can do all these amazing things. And the advocate knew he lost this guy at this point because he also knew Jane Doe, and she was a joke in the blind community. She was considered so bad at doing things that there was a joke that she couldn't find a way around her own room, and he wasn't entirely certain that that joke wasn't true. And yet, to this guy, she was accomplishing amazing things, even though she was actually one of their worst examples. Or you could take me. I have Erlen syndrome, but my case is hardly typical. Most can drive. Most are sensitive to fluorescent light, whereas I'm actually sensitive to incandescence and prefer fluorescence, or LED, with a third color spectrum. Most need a light tint on their glasses, and you can see their eyes. I'm wearing wraparounds with a dark tint and reflective coating on the front. So if you've met one person with a disability, you've only met that one person. We're each individuals. But what if you're a doctor? Assume you're an idiot. Most doctors are not specialists, unlike often the patients that they're treating, and you just need to learn to listen to your patient about what they already know about their own disability. Believe me, people who are disabled have often run into doctors who don't know what they're talking about. And even if you are a specialist, new discoveries are happening all the time, and you're not living it. I remember reading on this one guy, he had a cystic fibrosis patient, which, at least at the time of the writing, was a lethal disease, I think it still is, and he was a specialist in this field. And one of his patients, this kid, his family, invited him over for this fishing trip, and he got to be reminded all day long that this kid was dying. You know, whenever he was coughing and hacking up, you know, it was just a little taste of what the family goes through, which he had not had before. What if you saw a movie on it? Well, if you weren't an idiot already, you've probably been turned into one. Most movies and TV shows had actors who didn't have said disability and are playing one of a few stereotypes. The villain, who probably deserved his disability. The victim. Oh, Tiny Tim. It's like, look, I like Tiny Tim, but it's like villain, victim, inspiration, or someone with compensating powers. That's pretty much all you get. People see Rain Man and assume that all autistics are good at math. The truth? Some are geniuses. Others are just as bad as you are. Hollywood can perpetuate a select truth or a complete myth so well that everyone assumes it is true. For example, everyone thinks of the book Around the World in 80 Days as having a hot air balloon. You see it on all the book covers, in all the movies and cartoons. But the hot air balloon is rejected in the book within a couple of sentences as a stupid way to get where you're going in a hurry. Hollywood does it to books, and they do it to disabilities. So remember, each individual is unique, and so is any disability. The needs and the ability to meet those needs, physical, emotional, financial, will differ. So be willing to learn. And the journey may be erratic, uncomfortable, and with raw emotions. You may not know what to do or what to say, but that's a whole lot better than thinking you do know. So what are some of the things the disabled or their families may experience? Grief. Loss of what was, or in case of someone born disabled, the family's loss of expectations. My mom mourned for 2 years about not being able to see my eyes because of my glasses. I was completely oblivious to this, but hey. So there can be an adjustment period. The family dynamics may be different. It's like a whole lot of attention may be focused on one of the siblings, and the others may have more responsibilities or may feel neglected. If it's an income provider who's disabled, that can, you know, really change things up. The divorce rate for people with disabilities is about 80%. So clearly there's a need for a lot of spiritual help. Then there's money. It's not always more expensive, but it can be. There can be medical expenses, there can be transportation expenses, education, accommodations. The disabled can be unemployed or underemployed, either because of less ability to do a job, or, what happens even more often, people believing stereotypes and not believing they can actually do the job. They can also be underpaid. This isn't commonly known, but that minimum wage, well, if you're disabled, it's possible for you to be paid below minimum wage, legally. Then there's the future/legal aspect. For those who need continual care, who will care for them when I'm gone? Then there's the social aspect, and this is a real biggie. There's so much prejudice, there's so many stereotypes, alienation, abandonment. There are also boundary violations, you know, from being pushed in your wheelchair, patted on the head, to people just staring. Now, to a certain extent, your eyes is going to be attracted to what's different, and that's understandable. Don't do that thing where you pretend you're not staring. They notice. You know, try to respect their space. There can also be very much privacy violation. Imagine somebody coming up to you and asking for your personal medical history. Now, that doesn't mean you can't ask them about their disability, but phrase it more like, can I ask you about this? Let them share what they want to share, and respect that they're not going to share everything. That's their right. So I'm not saying don't ask and learn, but respect the fact that they have a right to say no. Other things that those with disabilities have to deal with, people being uncomfortable around them. Some people think it's catching, or afraid to mess up, and so they won't even do anything, which is messing up in an even worse way. Or maybe just the thought that this could be me, old age, accidents, this is a minority you can join after all. Maybe just that thought makes them feel uncomfortable, so they avoid the thought. I myself can feel uncomfortable around mental disabilities. I don't really know what to say, or how to deal with someone with depression. Disabilities can be invisible, meaning they have a disability, they need this accommodation, but you can't see any obvious signs. The deaf are often thought to be rude, because they're not responding to the person who said something behind them. Well, they didn't know about it. Someone with a chronic illness might not be believed. Oh, you were acting fine just a minute ago. Well, they were feeling better yesterday, but not necessarily today. And, of course, there's always the, you don't look, disabled, or you don't look blind, or something like that, as if what you look like actually determines what disability you have. They can be visible. You're in a wheelchair. Maybe an arm is missing or something. And then that means you're subject to stereotypes and being improperly labeled. Labels are a double-edged sword with disabilities. On one hand, you know, the power of the label, that means you know what's going on. On the other hand, you know, there's all this baggage or incorrect information that can be associated with the label. A disability can be undiagnosed. It can be hard to explain. It can cause weird behaviors. Tourette syndrome is a neurological disorder where you have vocal and physical tics. The ones that are having snuffling and sneezing tics are having a real fun time with this COVID-19 virus going around, because everyone thinks they have the virus. It's like, no, I always do this. And they can have these little twitches, and people can think they're mentally ill. They can have these vocalizations, making these noises or repeating sounds or just about any kind of thing you can imagine. The stereotype with that one is, oh, the cursing. Yes, there are some who have that cursing, that inappropriate language, but that's less than 10%. But that's the most famous symptom. And those behaviors, they can wax and wane, they can change. I mean, when I was reading the descriptions of all this, it was like, man, it's practically jury-rigged to get a kid in trouble at school. Which happens. A person with disability may have unconventional views of medicine. Others will be much more conventional. So the doctors know what they're doing for that particular disability or are able to help that particular patient, they will be very much gung-ho on that. But others who have found doctors less than helpful may be more unconventional. Consider multiple chemical sensitivity, where you are so sensitive to the various chemicals that products are made out of that you have to be careful what clothes you wear, how you launder them, what materials they're made out of, what town smells come in. Organic food, an absolute necessity. All these products that you have to be careful what you buy so you don't bring in a smell that hurts the person. That's pretty hard to explain to people. And a lot of people are going to be skeptical. They're not going to believe. Then there are other myths to fight. Being disabled doesn't automatically mean you're sick. A physical disability doesn't mean you're mentally disabled, or vice versa. So there's just all these little things to deal with. And I know I'm kind of going through these rather fast, but it's a big subject. And like I said, it's not like I'm going to be able to cover all the disabilities and hit every single one that's going to be in your church, or that might be in your church if you would accommodate them. So as a church, what can we do? And I've been purposely vague, because there are so many different things. But here are a few ideas. Our church is not exactly wheelchair accessible, and it's a rented building. There's not a whole lot we can do about that. But I've kind of wondered, say, you know, it'd be nice if we had a little ramp out in front. It doesn't have to be a big one to get it over those few steps. And since, like, okay, sure, but we don't have anyone in a wheelchair, you might think. Well, they're not going to come if they don't see a ramp. A ramp would be, it's like, hey, we may not have a perfectly accessible building, but we would like you to come. The fact that we don't have anyone in a wheelchair just means that we can take our time and actually make a ramp that isn't ugly. Maybe we could even get permission to just go ahead and do concrete, because it's really just a dip. And if we hit the concrete to the porch and, you know, had a little, obviously, little tunnel underneath it for the water to drain out, that would actually be a little easier on us, because we wouldn't have that puddle that happens whenever there's rain. Our website. Is it accessible to the blind? Most websites aren't. And yet, here we have these hours and hours and hours of audio, but if it's not accessible, they'll never get to it. And so, is it accessible to blind? I don't know. Of course, the deaf wouldn't be able to use our audio resources, but I'm thinking it's like, okay, there's a lot of software now that automatically transcribes what's being said. Obviously, it wouldn't be perfect, and I don't think we could deal with all the backlog of all the sermons. I don't think we had the resources for that. But what if we started having some type of auto-text thing so that we could, you know, put our sermons and put it, like, on some type of PDF or something and just, you know, put that out there for the deaf? That would be a way we could affect the world at large just from our own corner. So those are just some of the ideas. Remember, accommodations can be simple things. When we first moved into our current location, the sanctuary was very dimly lit. Now, I personally had no problem with the level of dimness. I did have a problem with the fact that it was a reddish color, and that was hard on my eyes. So I had emailed Pastor about that, because I knew that they were going to wind up changing the bulbs, and so I was worried that it's like, not only would it be brighter, but it would be reddish. And I know from past experience that some people just put in bulbs that are way too bright, way more brighter than they need, even regular people. So I emailed, explained my concerns, and, you know, they were able to take it up in terms of brightness, but get most of the bulbs to be blue-green. They had to leave a few of the reddish in there because of the way the sockets work, but it was able to put it into a good compromise thing where everyone else can see, but I'm not having to deal with this huge reddish light or have it way too bright. Not that the lighting's in there perfect, but that's kind of what setup we're dealing with. But it was a good middle ground position that worked as an accommodation, but didn't get out everyone else. And I want you to note something there. One of the responsibilities of the disabled are that we have to tell, here's what we need, because we know what we need. Church isn't going to know. That won't always be easy for them, because they're used to, they're very much aware of being judged by what they can or should do. But what those who aren't disabled need to do is, they need to be able to reach out, because the disabled are not going to necessarily reach out to you. They're just going to assume they're going to be rejected. They get that a lot. Or that they'll be just a passing project. In Matthew 20, verses 29 through 34, "And as they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed him. And behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And the multitude rebuked them, because they should hold their peace. But they cried the more, saying, Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And Jesus stood still, and called them, and said, What will ye that I shall do unto you? And they said unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion on them, and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him." Now again, not everything's going to end in healing. In fact, it rarely is in our case. But the point is that the multitude that was following Jesus was rejecting these blind men. But Jesus was not.